I was reading a book of Mother Teresa, words which she has spoken, and there was one line which to me reflected pure Advaita, where she said, "I accept whatever the Lord gives, and I give whatever He takes." She doesn't just mean objects, she means pleasure or pain. Pretty much sums up living the teaching. And what is the result? Peace of mind. We have a friend who was telling us about a discussion he had with someone who was doing a course, a Vedanta course. And when the person was informed about Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj's way, she said to him that this is too easy to talk about being in the now, being present, you're not the body. People don't want to do the hard work of undertaking a course, studying the chapters, studying the scriptures. So I don't buy into this whole thing of personal investigation, of being aware that you're aware. It's the lazy man's guide to enlightenment. I want to know what the scriptures say about Brahman, about the Atman. I want to know all the details chapter-wise. That is why I have done the course. Fair enough, I said, because that's a form of learning. But there should and would be only one result of a genuine endeavor, which is peace of mind in daily living. If the course has enabled you to touch that, then it has worked for you. If Maharaj's teaching or Bhagwan's teaching enables you to touch that, it has worked. Because that is a tangible measure of your journey. Like in the same book where Mother Teresa says, you know, we all talk about peace in the world and how countries should not fight. But doesn't it begin with peace in your own home? Why not settle those wars? Forget about the world. And it doesn't make life easy, but it makes life simple. One journalist asked Mother Teresa, knowing very well her answer, he said, "Are you married?" She said, "Yes." She said, "I'm married to Jesus, but I must admit that sometimes He can be very demanding." That means life is not a bed of roses. I mean, can you imagine the vast expanse of eternity is squeezed into a lifetime? And from that lifetime, you slice out the part where you are asleep and you're left with the waking state and the dreaming state, the identified consciousness. And that is where the problems of the me reside. All else is peace. And a majority of these problems in the waking state are with relationships. And that is why peace of mind in daily living, as my teacher would stress, is to be found through relationships. And you know why? Because ultimately there is no other. It appears that way. You know, Siddha Rameshwar Maharaj says that supposing you call someone a thief, that word thief is in your own consciousness. You calling someone else a thief is appearing in your own consciousness. It's got really nothing to do with the other. The other is an object on which you have put a label thief, but that is in your own consciousness. So is there another? So when you start looking at life and relationships with a lighter measure of subject versus object, you can then start seeing that the dawn of witnessing starts arising. It is clearly seen that people are instruments like you are. They have received their own set of conditioning like you have. They have their own genetic blueprint like you have. And with this understanding, you are no longer targeting individuals. It is no longer a game of me versus the other. So when you accept the other for who they are, because that is precisely how God has made them, you start accepting yourself for who you are, because that is precisely how God has made you. And then the subject-object divide starts disintegrating. And what does it result in? No hatred, malice, blame, condemnation, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt or shame. And what would that result in? Peace of mind. Then you see your relationships morph. You see them change. And it's got nothing to do with the other. Someone who is your pain point in life, who really pushes all your buttons, when you accept that they have been made precisely the way they have, and your buttons are being pushed because they were meant to be pushed, that brings an acceptance to the situation, not always a resistance. So they do become our teachers in a sense. They do become our teachers. Now, does that mean, as is the common point which comes up, that you accept being tormented? Does that mean that? Now, Ramakrishna has answered this very beautifully about that incident where an elephant comes charging at a man and the man refuses to move, saying the elephant is Brahman. But the Mahout, which is on the elephant, is shouting to the man, get out of the way because you'll be trampled. So he says, no, the elephant is Brahman. And then the man is told that, why aren't you listening? Because even the Mahout is Brahman. Brahman is only telling you to get out of the way. What about that? You see? So of course, decisions have to be made, relationships have to be investigated, and conclusions have to be reached, because that is the essence of daily living. Nobody is saying that you have to become like a god and accept whatever people are doing to you. But with the understanding that nobody truly does anything, you will see a wave of peace wash over all your relationships. This is guaranteed. You may even find yourself reacting the same way like you used to towards a particular person, but then afterwards there'll be a smile on your face. You know, that I know, now I know. And even my reaction is based on my conditioning, which God made. It starts opening up aspects of being through which light shines. The extreme of it was again when Ramakrishna talked about Prahlad, I think, who was being tortured by none other than his father. And the Lord came to him and said, I'll grant you any boon you want. And he said, I don't want your boons. I don't need them. And he said, no, I insist. And he said, okay, I would like one boon, which is that no harm should come to those who have tortured me. The Lord said, why? He said, because Lord, there are aspects of you only. How could I wish you harm? It doesn't mean you yourself don't get out of the way of harm. But there is no individual who has done something and towards whom you're holding a gun pointing at him. You did this to me. How could you? How dare you? So what happens when you start living with this teaching is your thinking mind, which was previously engaged in this person said this to me, this person did this to me, I should not have said this, I should not have done that, you realize that this dialogue which was going on in your mind starts reducing. The thinking mind starts diminishing. So when that happens, what shines forth is just being which is not engaged in thinking. The compulsive habit of thinking starts reducing. I don't think there's a more beautiful gift than that. Someone sent me a joke about Lord Shiva complaining. He said these human beings, they think they have problems with relationships. Look at what I have to deal with every day. My bull is scared of my snakes. My snakes are scared of Ganesha's mouse. My mouse is scared of the cow. He said it's all about relationships. I have to also see that they all get along. Everybody has to get along. Rinanubandhan. What is the way out of Rinanubandhan? Otherwise the cause-effect loop keeps perpetuating. I did this to me, then the other will say, now I will do this to you. You did this to me, I will do this to you. You did this to me, I will do this. That is Rinanubandhan. What is the way out? Simple. Total acceptance that the other is not the doer. Then the cause-effect loop has nothing to hold on to. There is very little written about Rinanubandhan A few lines I have read of Shirdi Sai Baba. Then I believe in the Padma Purana there's some material on Rinanu Bandhan. But my own understanding is that the way out of Rinanu Bandhan is with the total acceptance of non-doership. Then the sting in a relationship is lost. The need to react is lost. And as Eckhart had given one very beautiful exercise, I think in The Power of Now, I'm not sure, where he says that if someone is, I mean, I'm paraphrasing him, but if someone is antagonizing you or upsetting you or saying something, just be the aware presence which is hearing that or seeing that. I received an email asking me to talk about how to cope with the uncertainty of life and what can one do to fortify oneself against the uncertainty of life. But the fact is, the bedrock of life is uncertainty, because we never know what the next moment is going to bring. Sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. So in the initial stages, the me wants to hold on only to the pleasure. I only want things which are pleasurable to me to happen. I do not want pain. But life keeps teaching you repeatedly that that is not life. Life is duality, sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain. So to have an acceptance that life does mean these opposites, I may not like the pain, but if I do not accept it, I suffer. What was a basic level of suffering, which was the pain, is getting compounded by my not wanting that pain. Then what happens is the perspective shifts. If the investigation is taken further, who is it that wants only the pleasure and not the pain? Who is it that wants to fortify itself against the uncertainty of life? And who feels the uncertainty of life? The me, with its sense of control. The me realizes I am not able to control my life to provide me only pleasures. And it can keep running after pleasures till it reaches a point of exhaustion, that these pleasures are not getting me true happiness. Why? Because they come and go. That is my own life's experience. Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. It comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. Suddenly some pain pops up, some news of someone ill, my own health, some financial crisis. It is a natural course of evolution to understand that nobody guaranteed you only pleasures in life. And with that, the controlling aspect of the me, that things should be only this way, that starts dissolving. And as Jesus would say, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. That starts becoming the perspective. Then the acceptance is I do not have control. I am not able to micromanage my life to safeguard myself against things that might be painful to me. So the hold of the me starts dissolving. The me and its sense of control starts evaporating. It is a tremendous gift to accept that there's a lot in your life which is beyond your control. Your next thought is not in your control. Your next breath is not in your control. When you fall off to sleep is not in your control. Can you put an alarm and say at 10:30 p.m. I'm going to fall asleep? You start accepting life. The lot which has been given to you, you start accepting. Your thinking mind starts getting disengaged. The light of being, of awareness, starts shining through, and you live your life in peace and harmony with the will of the Lord. You will still take rational decisions which need to be made in each situation. It will be evaluated. The decision will be taken, knowing that the outcome of the decision is not in your control. You don't have to live like a zombie with the understanding. Because we try and push for outcomes. We try and push to get results which we feel are favorable. How do we know? It's like someone asked Ramana Maharshi, what do you think? You're just sitting on that couch in silence all the time. What good is that doing to the world? And he said, how do you know? how do you know? And he was asked, don't you think it's a waste of time? And he said, when there is no time, where's the question of wasting it? And here we all keep our watches 5 minutes fast, 10 minutes fast, because we have to do this on time, that on time. And if we push this a bit further, trying to control life, wanting only pleasures, not pain, the actual reason for it is because we are afraid to die. It is all a form of fear. Control is a form of fear. And as the Buddhists say, ultimately the foundation of all fear is the fear of death. Now the fear of death of whom? Of the me. The fear of death of the me and my story. What will happen to me? What will happen to what I stand for? What I believe in? What I feel this one has done to me? That is why Eckhart has said, and I don't know if he was quoting someone else, that the real purpose of life is to die before you die and find that there is no death. Death of the me. Me and my identifications. And how does that translate in daily living? Supposing in the past someone said something and you would say, I disagree with you, this is my view. This starts changing because you understand that the person is saying something based on their inputs, their conditioning, their socio-economic status, their geographical location, what their parents did to them. So their point of view is as valid as your point of view. So you may not agree with what they are saying because you have your own perspective on the matter, but you will not discount that perspective. Because if everyone is an instrument of the divine, there's no question of one being right and the other being wrong. You see? So this whole dialogue, which I say, starts changing. The I disagree with what you are saying changes to an acceptance of what you are saying with the full understanding that you are fully entitled to your point of view just as I am. That is what I mean, that the relationships change, the resistance diminishes. This is the tangible way you can feel a teaching settling down into your cells. That is the test of a teaching. That is when the light of consciousness starts truly shining forth, which is what? It is the light of presence. Being present means this. The seconds or minutes you would have spent arguing or saying, no, isne aise bola, how can he say that, is all dissolved. The story is dissolved. And whatever each moment presents is embraced. So this light of being, of consciousness, of awareness is always there. It does not have to be discovered. It does not have to be found. But what was cloaking it, which is the layers of the mind, those start getting removed. And that light starts shining brightly, which is the light of presence, not the light of a me who is enlightened. It is the light of the absence of the me. Judgments fall away. You stop judging people and yourself. Observing becomes replaced by witnessing. Observing, which is a subject observing an object and putting a label on it, undergoes a shift to witnessing. It could be people where you were observing them earlier and putting labels on them, shifts to witnessing who they are and knowing that in essence it is the same consciousness which is operating through them like it is operating through you. It is the same electricity going through all the gadgets in the kitchen, be it the fridge, the microwave, the toaster. Each gadget is designed in a different way. Observing becomes witnessing when the events which happen in your life are witnessed more instead of observed as being good or bad. The witness does not label them such. The witness sees the arising of an event for what it is, which may be pleasurable or painful. But the witness does not strive to move away from the painful ones. It is embraced, and then what needs to be done is done. to tackle the situation. So the gear of your life starts over time, sometimes it is sudden, shifting from observing to witnessing. Witnessing the flow of life. Witnessing is awareness. Yes, awareness of what is, which is our natural state. You see, right now, if there was no thought, that's the witness. Now, if a thought arises or an event happens on the screen of your awareness, that is still the witness. But thereafter what happens, the witness becomes the observer if there is involvement in the thought and thinking takes place in the duration of time. Sorry?
Labeling comes.
Yes. Yeah. So to rest in witnessing is when that labeling stops. The obsession to stick labels on people's forehead stops. This one is kind, this one is arrogant, this one irritates me, that one is so generous. According to me, that is true love. To accept the other completely, unconditionally, whoever the other may be, what greater love is that than that? You may not go and give jhappis and hugs to everyone, but when you live with the understanding that there is truly no one who is not an instrument of the divine, that is why Maharaj would emphasize on abide in your beingness, in the I am. Abide there. Don't go extend yourself outwards. Just be. And the more you are being, like in meditation. Meditation is being. Whatever thoughts come, they are not judged. Meditation is not about no thoughts. Meditation is about witnessing the thoughts. And sometimes the mind runs away with a thought, and one realizes that the mind had run away with a thought, and it's come back to the moment. Now, who realized that? Not the me, because it is the me which ran away with the thought. It is the witness. So meditation helps tap into this beingness, witnessing. Because it is truly witnessing the thoughts which come and go, be it for 10 minutes, half an hour, whatever duration you want to sit for in meditation, without judging the thoughts as good or bad, or this thought should not happen, that short thought, that is a meditation practice, and living that in daily living is true meditation according to me. Then when the mind is engaged, it's the working mind fully in the moment, doing the task at hand, meditation. And when it is not engaged, the thinking mind is no longer rampant, like an elephant going wild. That is meditation. That is the living meditation. That is peace of mind in daily living. The bedrock of daily living becomes meditation, not a practice. This is the practice, life, morning to evening. No thinking mind as far as the birds are concerned. But they don't have a gift which human beings have. Because human beings are the only species which can separate being from experiencing. That is also a gift of the human birth. There is one boy who comes to my mother's meditations, young lad in his early 30s. He's always very excited because he tries different things which give him a nice spiritual high. So his latest thing was that you must try cacao. There's something called organic cacao which sends the mind into certain zones and spheres. And if it's not cacao, it's mushrooms. If it's not mushrooms, it's something else. So I said, that's great, because you do know that the experience is giving you something, but when will it be that you do not need an experience to enjoy the drug of peace of mind in daily living? Because experience happens to a me, my experience. Then I want an even better experience, me. When you realize that your dependency on experiences is fading away, that is a true sign of the deepening of a teaching. That is what abiding in the self is. Not an experience which happens to me. Peace is not an experience. It is your natural state. Peace does not come and go. It may appear so, but it is always there. For me, living well is living a peaceful life in harmony. It's a natural process. How old are you? You know, I was 29 when I met my teacher. And I was in my second book, I think, The Buddha's Sword, he had written the foreword. So he was in hospital at the age of around 87 or 88. So at the end of his visit, he took out his book and he gave it to the doctor as a gift. And the doctor told him, I don't need this. I'm only 57. When I'm retired, I'll take it. But when you start young, it's such a beautiful gift, you know, because it gives you so much, such a strong foundation. And it's so beautiful when one starts young with this awareness. Truly, I mean, I think it's a real gift. And you know what you answered when I asked you, when do you feel it began? And you said, since the beginning. It's actually like that. One can't really, sometimes an event may have started the journey consciously, like a loss, most likely a bereavement or loss. But when you actually investigate, it's as if you have a feeling, I've come with this blueprint. And so you start just discovering yourself.
So every time she went, everybody would look at her and so, what happened? Did your husband die? What's wrong with you? You know, why are you here? And in, actually, 30 years ago, it was much more stark.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more common to see younger people.
Yeah.
But those days, it was very rare. Actually, all very old people.
Very true. Very true. I think it's so beautiful when I get emails, you know, from people who've just finished college or very young, but so interested in, you know, the aspects of life and living. Because this is, while we are in manifestation, is to apply all these learnings, right? After you're gone, it's gone. Once you're dead, as someone asked Ramesh in his last days, you know. He said, it's like a cockroach. Once it's dead, it's dead. Once you're dead, it's gone. But in life, in daily living, all these masters have come to show us the way back home. As Maharaj would say, you're asking for a way when you never left your home. See, it appears that you all have actually left your homes and come here. It appears like that. But is it also not true that whatever has taken place since you woke up today has happened in your field of awareness? If you were in deep sleep, you would not have come here, right? So could you imagine this vast field of awareness from the time you woke up, let's say, for the sake of this discussion, in which everything transpired? Like in a dream. In a dream, you catch a train, you take the bus, you go somewhere to meet a friend. There's a screen on which the dream is witnessed. Is this any different? In that field, all events, where you will go from now, you'll go back home, what will happen? That film, that's the witness. And that is, the more and more that awareness seeps in, the less and less the Maya has its grip. I'm seeing you after a long time. How's life? How's life, Anup? Which one?
So, you know, I found it on Amazon.
Which is that?
Marshall.
Uh-huh.
You place an order, then after 4 days, it's in a book.
It will come when it's meant to.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is not about it being necessary to do anything. It is about doing that which you are meant to do. Why is it necessary to go to the bathroom? You know, if you say that I am not the doer, then can you even control the fact? It is precisely what Arjuna told Krishna, that why should I fight my preceptors? It's not necessary to do anything. And he puts his bow and arrow down. And Arjuna is told by Krishna, your conditioning has been of a warrior, your genetics are of a warrior. You have been trained to fight. So you pick up that bow and fight, because it is not you doing that act. And it is not you who are responsible for the consequences. because as time I have already killed them. So what does Arjuna do? He doesn't say I'm not doing anything because there's nothing necessary, and he doesn't leave the battlefield. He picks up his bow and fights. So surely if you have been designed a certain way to do certain work, to not do other kind of work, that has to be honored. Because to not honor that is doership. You see, it's a very tricky thing because the ego comes in through the back door. It's actually a very natural process, because if you honor what is, what comes up in the moment, you will do precisely that which you were designed to do, and so will the other. You see, so this is not about looking back or investigating what is the doership and extricating that. Supposing you feel bad about something, right? That is a natural feeling bad. It's not, why do I feel bad? You're not doing it. Supposing you're sensitive in nature and someone tells you something which upsets you. The thought of I should not be upset will not arise if there is an understanding that you are made precisely the way God has made you. Because you have the total acceptance of who you are. To fight that natural inclination is doership. The pointer is this. Because when this kind of understanding stays at the intellectual level, at the Manomaya Kosha, then all these situations start cropping up. But no. Everything is precisely as it is, the way God has designed it.
You are sent to feel.
Certainly, that is the human experience, of course.
So accepting this fact.
Yes.
Yes.
No, it's acceptance.
Who is accepting?
Doership is not accepting the feeling. Why should I feel bad? I should not feel bad.
So accepting the fact is same thing.
There is no doership in acceptance. Is accepting God's will doership? Christ on the cross said, not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. Means what? He was crucified. He's accepting, no? There's no doership in that. Not wanting things a certain way is doership. And there are always two sides of the coin. Like, I'll end on this note where Maharaj says, to refrain from work is hard, but to refrain from unnecessary work is even harder. But the flip side is what I read about Mother Teresa, and when someone asked her, you're so old now, why don't you rest? And she said, but I have all of eternity to rest. Both made precisely the way they have been made. So simple.